Hey guys, what's up? It's Nolan. Just letting you know that we're recording the podcast with cameras again. So if that's how you'd like to listen to your podcast while watching it, video will be back up on the Donut Podcast YouTube channel. We'll put a link down in the description if that's where you prefer. So here's the episode. It's 1870, and a samurai has just started a trading operation in a Japan still coming to grips with the modern world. Through hard work, ingenious engineering, and perhaps more than a little war profiteering, that company would later grow to be Mitsubishi. One of the four largest companies and one of the world's four largest economies. Mitsubishi is responsible for some of the most successful, most iconic, and most tuned cars of the 20th century. At its peak, it was behind seven Dakar Rally wins, four World Rally Championships, shoutouts in Wu-Tang Clan songs, a key role in the Fast and Furious, virtually an entire Jackie Chan movie, and sold 346,000 cars in a single year. In the mid-2000s, Mitsubishi seemed like it was on top of the automotive world. It had a clear brand identity and a loyal fan base. So how did sales plummet to just 15% of their peak in a few short years? How did the company watch Volkswagen's Dieselgate unfold and then top it? And is Mitsubishi responsible for the trend of naming mid-size crossovers after once iconic performance models? All that and more on today's Pass Gas as we learn about the rise and fall of Mitsubishi.
Pass Gas Podcast. It's about cars, it's not about forts.
Is this our first episode ever to start with a samurai?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty good sign, gentlemen.
I mean, we've mentioned feudal Japan in most of our episodes.
But, oh, yeah. We try and make a point of it.
Yeah.
Big time feudal Japan.
First samurai, though.
Fans
over here. They actually made a Jackie Chan edition Evo 3 with a little plaque that said Jackie Chan on it.
That is a get.
Yeah.
If one of those popped up on Top Rank or...
Oh, yeah.
Bring a Trailer or something, I'd look at it.
I would click on that
link
for
sure. I'd bookmark it.
How much do you think that Jackie Chan bump is worth?
Oh, I'd say you add 30, 40 grand.
If you get it signed by the
man. He only used rally art cars in his movies. Did you know that?
In all of his movies.
Did not know that.
He had a Pajero Evo in Operation Condor.
What about Rush Hour?
Rush Hour, he drove a Mitsubishi Montero Cross Sport.
Oh.
Convertible.
Sick. Cool. Welcome back to Pass Gas, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes. I'm joined by my co-hosts. We got James Pumphrey.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And Joe Weber.
It's-a-me, Joe.
And we have a special guest in the studio with us today, Justin Freeman. Welcome to the show.
Justin. Hello. And by special guest, of course, we mean good friend that we see every day. Yeah. But we were like, hey, Justin, come sit and talk to us over here for the next hour.
Yeah, I'm only allowed in the office if I bring my dog with me.
Yeah, Edgar, his dog, is under the table
in
hanging
my lap
out with us. Today we're talking about one of the most iconic brands. I would say it's a tough one to talk about because I would say they're kind of like a foundational brick in like the tuner donut
absolutely
lore.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Mitsubishi confuses the heck out of me.
Yeah, they really do.
They were such, like you said, they were such a part of the foundation of people our age getting into cars.
Definitely.
You know, there's a number of Mitsubishis. You got Evos, you got Eclipses, mm-hmm. you got GT3000s, aka GTOs.
Mm-hmm. GTO, yep.
But not so much anymore.
No.
Yeah. No.
And apparently something bad happened to them recently.
But they did just announce 25. They're coming out with 25 new models by 2025.
Are any of them cars? Probably.
What's
not
your definition of a car, dude?
That seems like a really odd business decision.
Sports car.
Yeah, I know. It's very weird.
Anybody else make 25 cars?
That's a lot.
Like, does Mercedes make 25 cars? Does Ford make 25?
Oh, Mercedes absolutely does.
Yeah, I think Mercedes
25,
does.
25, yeah.
You did choose probably maybe the worst.
I chose the one that makes dump trucks and supercars.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, besides Mercedes, probably everyone else. Yeah, seems like everyone else is kind of paring down their lineups these days. So 25 is kind of amazing.
Justin, how do you feel about Mitsubishis?
Yeah.
They growing up, they were the tuner car. It was the entry car on Need for Speed Underground.
Yeah.
It was the car in Fast and the Furious. Mm-hmm. They're also really good with off-road stuff. You know, it was just like, why would you give that up? You know what I mean? It's just really weird.
It doesn't make a lot of money.
They had stuff all-wheel drive, you know? Like, not many people were doing that.
My friend Ilya, you met Ilya, Nolan?
Yes.
He drove not an Evo, but a Lancer.
Mm-hmm. Did he try to make it an Evo?
No. Oh. He didn't know what it was. You know, but me, who had just played a ton of Gran Turismo, was like, oh, yeah, Lancer.
Yeah.
And it was just so bad. It was horrible.
I know a guy named Ben. Shout out, Ben.
Ben
Schambach.
Ben Schambach.
He only buys yellow Lancers.
That's really specific.
Yeah, and he had a base model yellow, like, 2003 Lancer. And this is the kind of guy that'd be like, hey, dude, you want a wrench today? Uh-huh. And it's like, yeah, dude, come on out. And we have a bonfire and everything, but he never, like, wrenches with anyone. He just tears his car apart, like, fully disassembles his transmission, puts a new gear in, throws it all back together in a matter of 4 hours, puts it back in his car. Dude, this was fun. Drives off.
What?
Like, what?
Is he on meth?
I don't know. He was a homeschooled guy, so maybe, I don't know. But one day we're at work, and we're scrolling Facebook Marketplace, as we do. You know, this is before Donut. We find a rally art yellow Lancer. Oh. And he's just like, that's an upgrade from the base model. He literally leaves work and goes and buys it. And then now he's driving an upgrade. You know? And then
that one came with the Oz wheels.
Yes, exactly. Had it all.
Spurler.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was pre-Evo in the States.
Were those still front wheel drive or all wheel drive?
Front.
Still front. Only the Evo, I think, got all.
I see.
So now we're trying to find him a yellow Evo.
He's going to pay $50,000. Yeah.
Right. This one's a little harder to take apart and put back together. Extra pieces.
I need to call my guy. Yutaro Iwasaki wanted to be a samurai. Born in 1834 to a family of peasants who lived, quote, scraping the bottom of the rice bowl, Yutaro's family had been members of the samurai warrior nobility only a few generations before, but were forced to sell off their status to pay off debts during the Great Tenmai Famine. But despite the family's hardships, Yutaro's hardworking mother made it possible for him to get an education despite a rarely sober father. Quote, little is known of his childhood, but sources agree on his native intelligence and extreme mischievousness.
Ooh.
Gets into trouble, climbs trees with a slingshot.
Samurai stuff.
By his early adulthood, Yutaro had scrounged enough money to buy the title of a lesser samurai, opening up more opportunities for him.
You buy titles?
You can just buy samurai?
Yeah, what the heck does that mean?
Why can't we do that now?
Well, there might be a site that you could pay to.
Those are scams. Yeah.
The world Yutaro was born into had more in common with the Middle Ages than with the steam-powered modern Japan that Yutaro eventually helped build. Japan in 1834 was still in what historians call the Edo period, which had begun well over 200 years earlier. Japan was a feudal society, with peasants working the land for local feudal lords. Lords depended on the shogun for samurai, the ultimate source of military and political power. The samurai, loyal to the shogun, ensured that it was the shogun and not the emperor who was the de facto head of Japan. Edo society was, perhaps predictably, very strict. So strict that his father landed in jail after a particularly wild drinking binge. Yutaro himself was sent to prison for 7 months for insinuating a local official could be bribed.
Oh,
wow.
That's a weird Japanese trope, the drinking dad that does nothing but drink and is just like, how do you afford stuff? You know?
I'll talk to you after the...
After prison and while working as a tutor, Yutaro met a local samurai, Toyo Yoshida, who was under house arrest for allegedly slapping another samurai.
I challenge you to a duel.
You can't leave your house, man.
You're just slapping too much.
The two became fast friends, and Yoshida's progressive politics and interest in opening the then-closed Japan to industry and foreign trade led to Yutaro's further disenchantment with feudal society. After a political reshuffle in 1859 put Yoshida back in power, Yutaro was brought along as a clerk to learn the workings of the Japanese government. Though Yoshida was unfortunately assassinated in 1862, Yotaro was eventually able to buy back his family's samurai status. When the revolution came in 1867, Yotaro was friendly with the anti-shogun side. So, when the shogun was eventually overthrown, Yotaro began to buy up ships of all shapes and sizes, knowing that the new government would be much more sympathetic to foreign trade than the old one.
It sounds like insider trading to me.
Because he knows what's coming.
Dude, yeah. Sounds, you're going to get slapped if you keep talking about him like this.
That sounds like insider trade. Oh, this is going down. I'm going to buy some ships. These gates are opening up.
Some people
up.
Might just call that prudent.
It's just reading the room.
He started disassembling the ships and putting them back together again with his friends.
By 1873, Yotaro had struck out on his own with a new company named Mitsubishi. The Mitsubishi logo of three diamonds is a blend of the crests of noble families Yotaro worked for before founding the company.
Don't you miss logos that actually mean something?
I like a bland font that looks like everyone else, you know?
Yeah, I love the crypto.com center font.
.etf after the company name. That's what I like.
Yeah, I like just like sans serif.
Yeah.
Just simple.
Slightly modified Helvetica with .com is really just sells it.
Helvetica heavy in like a non-descript blue.
Yeah. Remember when James Cameron used the
papyrus?
Papyrus. Yeah.
Really funny SNL sketch with Ryan Gosling.
Yes, yeah. Very good. Very good.
If you guys haven't heard of Ryan Gosling,
check him out. Go check him out.
Young up-and-comer.
Yeah. Really good at movies. Really good
stuff. Very stoic.
He's in this little sci-fi called Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah,
go and subscribe to his movies.
Yeah. Yotaro quickly became notorious for the extravagances he used to woo competitors and clients alike. Champagne, geisha, fine foods, and flattery were just a few of the tools at Yotaro's disposal.
Born at the wrong time.
The tactics worked, James. Yotaro's empire began at just 11 ships, but in less than 15 years, he would come to control more than 80% of shipping in Japan and vanquish American and British shipping companies in competition for foreign routes.
Whoa.
Mitsubishi's reputation during these years was like many Gilded Age companies in the U.S., when competition appeared, Mitsubishi cut rates so low that no company could possibly remain profitable. So it was only Mitsubishi's deeper pockets that kept it from bankruptcy. After engaging in a vicious rate war, the Japanese press dubbed Yotaro the sea monster and tried to influence the public and government to curb his power.
This is when you get a full body tattoo.
Hell yeah, dude.
I am the sea monster.
I'm the Kraken.
That's a sick nickname. I just learned, this might be obvious to you guys at the table and listeners, when you see like a bunch of the same like franchise in a tight area, that just means that they're just trying to strangle the local competition, the family-owned stuff.
Ugh. So like the joke about like a Starbucks across from a Starbucks. It's not on accident.
No, it's a strategy. They're going to close one of those
things. What about Mattress Firm?
Can we talk about Mattress
Firm
finally?
Can we talk about that? I don't know.
I don't think we can. I think we're a Helix family. Helix.
I did when I was in, where was that? It was just outside, it was Carlsbad, New Mexico. They have just one long street that goes all through town. And there was a Domino's at each end and one in the middle.
Mm.
And I saw that and I was like, I bet there's no local pizza shops here anymore.
Yeah.
Shout out Carlsbad.
Where am I going to get my Christmas pizza in New Mexico?
Anyway, back to Yotaro here. It was time, not government regulation, that would best Yotaro. The founder of Mitsubishi was born into a world of feudal lords, shoguns, samurai, and warring clans. He died in 1885. Leaving behind a Japan that was firmly in the grip of the industrial world, one that he himself helped to build.
You know what I just realized is he did exactly what America did 100 years later, which was kind of just like cut off international trading power. But it was, you know, like the American car companies that were kind of curbing Japanese car sales in America.
With like protectionism.
Chicken tags.
Chicken tax.
But imagine that life, though. You went from a samurai to an industrial god.
It's insane, yeah. I think about that sometimes, what it must have been like to be like my grandparents, you know, who were born in like the 19,
during the 20, Depression.
Yeah, mid-20s. And, yeah. And you just see...
technology just boom.
I mean, yeah.
Well, I mean, we are doing that right now.
Yeah, but...
we're going to be replaced
by AI.
It's
not as drastic, we're watching
it. It's not as drastic? Are you kidding me?
I don't think so.
Technology jumping right now is insane. It's never been like
I
this
do
before.
Think it's... it.
I don't know. It's
maybe
like
industry, like industry. Industrial type stuff, may have been a little. But like, dude, technology is jumping like
you're right. Like
at a pace that has not even come.
We've
close
made
to
more
this.
technological advances in the last 10 years than they did in like the last 200 years.
Like, I'm legitimately scared that none of us are going to have jobs in the next decade.
Yeah, that's
like
a good concern.
Our jobs are all going to be fake.
But
we should have learned how to swing a hammer.
People, when like,
but there's robot hammer swingers.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And they're so strong.
But like, what's the point? What? I don't want to go down it, but like, there's just gonna be AI serving a bunch of poor people because they took all it. But all we got to do is get squirt guns.
That's true.
Because they're not waterproof.
Oh no, we didn't waterproof.
It's salt water.
Yeah, salt water.
We'll just have to move to the ocean. That's all.
Yeah, we moved to the ocean.
Is it death clock into the water?
Live there, die there.
We'll get back to more Pass Gas, but right now, a word from our sponsors.
Mitsubishi thrived for the next 70 years, eventually becoming one of the largest four companies in Japan. During this time, the Japanese economy was dominated by the Zaibatsu, wealthy cliques.
Ooh.
Anyone play Tekken?
Dude, well, dude. That's like a Pusha T song or something. Like, I got wealthy click.
I got Zaibatsu.
Zaibatsu money, wealthy clicks. You are hiding a child. These wealthy clicks controlled virtually all aspects of said economy. The power of these Zaibatsu companies can be approximated by comparing them to now broken up companies like Standard Oil or U.S. Steel. So they were like monopolies, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Mitsubishi was alone in having diversified ventures in areas like banking, insurance, mining, warehousing, aircraft, steel, and real estate. What does the aircraft market look like back then? And it was during
This is during World War One,
so 1911s.
Yeah,
little biplanes, open air, Red Baron type stuff.
Yeah,
speaking
probably.
Of pizza,
God, I'm getting hungry.
I want to go to a sit-down Red Baron.
Just plain blueprints all over the wall.
You know what I don't understand is, sorry, this is a tangent, but Papa Murphy's.
Why, can we talk about Papa Murphy's?
Why would I want to go buy a pizza that's not cooked so I can go cook it at my house?
That sounds like a Kramer from Seinfeld business idea.
Yeah.
Yes. So what's the best part of the pie?
People
when it's fresh.
You know, a lot of people...
They got to cook the pie?
Bingo.
Like, George's dad gets on it with him?
Yeah.
Why would they want to cook their own pizza? You're paying it. It's a stupid idea.
You need to believe in me. Not again. Oh, my God. It's like I'm there.
Yeah.
I did not watch Seinfeld.
You would have loved it.
You wouldn't believe how many Papa Murphy apologists are out there, though.
Yeah. And it was during this period that Mitsubishi first began to make automobiles, dipping its toe into the market with the 1917 introduction of the Model A. If you're thinking that sounds like a Model T or a Ford Model A, you'd be right. The Model A looked very similar to Ford's Model T, but it was based on a Fiat rather than a Ford.
Hmm.
This four-door, seven-seat sedan was powered by a 35-horsepower motor and was designed to shuttle politicians and businessmen around in style. 35 horsepower is pretty good for back then.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah.
However, the focus on wealth and luxury proved too effective. As long build times and high prices, the entire rear compartment was finished in lacquered white cypress.
Ooh.
Meant that only 22 were ever made.
It doesn't take that long for me to lacquer white cypress.
Yeah, but you've been doing it forever.
Yeah.
Hey, they didn't have the tools we have.
A paintbrush?
Spray guns.
But Mitsubishi's best-known product during this period was the A6M Zero. Ooh, I've heard of this guy. If any of you served in World War II, especially in the Pacific Theater, you may be familiar with these, if any of our listeners are World War II veterans. First flown in 1939, this was the Empire of Japan's workhorse carrier fighter aircraft for the duration of the war. In all, over 10,000 would be built. Movie fans may remember Hiro Horikoshi, the Mitsubishi employee most responsible for the design of the Zero, as the subject of Miyazaki's 2013 film, The Wind Rises. American occupation of Japan following World War II spelled the end for Mitsubishi and the Zaibatsu. Each company was broken up into much smaller pieces, which meant they had less political capital. But these new entities, called Keiretsu, would still maintain close business relationships with each other, although each component was independently owned and operated. And thus, Mitsubishi was broken up into four main companies: Mitsubishi Corporation, Mitsubishi Electric, MUFG Bank, and Mitsubishi Heavy Industries. The last of these, Mitsubishi Heavy Industries, is where we really get to the cars.
I love the Heavy Industries moniker. It's so...
Dude, it's so sick.
Sick.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Dude, we should make a donut shirt that says Donut Heavy Industries.
That'd be dope, because Subaru's also Fuji Heavy Industries.
Yeah, Fuji Heavy
Industries.
Donut Heavy Industries. Just really thick t-shirts.
Dude, it's like an 11-pound hoodie.
That's
bunch of Gildans.
It's like a weighted blanket.
Yeah, a weighted blanket. A weighted hoodie?
Have a weighted hoodie would be sick.
Oh, that would
that
be
brain
so
dead hoodie I have is like 6.5 pounds.
What?
I love it.
I don't know, not really, probably. It feels heavy, though.
Cheap labor and American investment in Japan brought on a post-war economic miracle that created a rapidly expanding middle class, and with it, the demand for more automobiles. Smaller companies like Nissan and Toyota, which had not been part of the Zaibatsu, had already gotten a head start on the car industry, with both companies exporting cars by 1959. Mitsubishi, eager to regain its place in the sun, responded in 1960 with the introduction of its first car since the Model A, the 500. Mitsubishi's racing heritage began soon after, with the little 594 cubic centimeter engine car taking first, second, third, and fourth places in the under 750cc category at the 1962 Macau Grand Prix. By American standards, these cars were tiny, smaller than the original Minis or Beetles, but Mitsubishi wasn't done yet. The company continued building out its automotive line with K-cars, K-trucks, compacts, executive cars, and vans. Mitsubishi's prowess in Japan hit a high mark in 1971 when the Mitsubishi Colt F2000 won the 1971 Japanese Grand Prix at Fuji. It was around this time, 1970, that the Mitsubishi Motors Company was created as we know it today.
You know, we talked about Carroll Shelby's like Dodge years.
Mm-hmm.
When he had that weird Charger in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that like a Colt, a Mitsubishi Colt?
Colt F2000 sounds like so many different things.
Yeah.
But I think there was a Dodge Charger Mitsubishi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's
I saw one at
Dodge
Redwood.
Colt.
Yeah, there's a Dodge Colt, but there was the Mitsubishi Charger that was built by Mitsubishi. It has all Mitsubishi badges and stuff.
Weird.
I have a picture.
And we'll talk about Diamond Star Motors later as well, which is another Chrysler Mitsubishi collab.
DSM.
Mm-hmm. Oh, BDSM. I love it.
Mitsubishi was feeling itself. It had a full range of cars for sale. It was fresh off a Grand Prix win and was ready to compete with the big boys. In the early 1970s, that meant going to the heart of car culture, the North American market. In 1971, Mitsubishi entered into a deal with Chrysler, in which Chrysler would purchase a 15% stake in Mitsubishi Motors, import the Mitsubishi Galant, and resell it as the Dodge Colt.
Told ya.
Bing bong.
That's called foreshadowing and good podcasting. Great job, guys.
We did it.
Yay.
Perhaps the most famous fruit of this partnership was the 1978-83 second-generation Dodge Challenger, which was really a rebadged Mitsubishi Galant Lambda. Good stuff, Challenger.
We were wrong. We said Charger. It was a Challenger.
Lambda.
You guys were close. While the advent of the catalytic converter and consumer demand for better fuel economy made horsepower ratings plunge across the auto industry, the once proud Dodge Challenger Marquee saw the lowest power levels in its history, with the standard engine outputting 77 horsepower and the optional Hemi engine
making only 105 horsepowers.
We swapped the weakest Hemi into our Challenger.
But the car
is that a four-cylinder Hemi?
I don't know.
Dude, Glock Lambdas are pretty cool.
Surprisingly, though, the car was a success. But relations between Chrysler and Mitsubishi were less than excellent. Chrysler was perturbed that Mitsubishi was competing against it in non-U.S. markets, while Mitsubishi felt that Chrysler, then in its era of pre-Iacocca malaise, was getting in the way of competing with the larger car brands it viewed as upstarts.
Pre-Iacocca malaise sounds like a sauce.
Chrysler was so devoid of ideas that it resorted to paying Neil Armstrong to huck its car's warranties on TV.
The warranties? Yeah. Not even the cars. The warranties.
So
this will get you to the moon and back.
Yeah.
So who could blame Mitsubishi for wanting to break free from them? Although it still supplied badge-engineered cars to Chrysler, Mitsubishi longed to compete with Honda, Toyota, and Nissan on its own terms. It wanted to enter the U.S. market under its own name. They finally did so in 1982. But with a whimper instead of a bang. Mitsubishi had just 70 dealers in 22 states. And for context, Ferrari currently has 67 dealers in 21 states. And even Mitsubishi now, a shadow of its former self, has at least 300 dealers. One of those is in downtown LA. You can go get yourself a new Mirage. With those numbers, Mitsubishi was miles behind their fellow Japanese brands. But they wanted to get bigger. So when it came to North America in the 80s, Mitsubishi came in with everything they had. Compacts, subcompacts, midsize sedans, sports cars, minivans, SUVs, and even a truck. Despite fewer dealers, Mitsubishi sold well where they were available. In a decade where car culture was dominated by Grand Nationals, Exotics, and DeLoreans, a quiet revolution was brewing. Mitsubishi was getting ready for its golden age, and it began in the vastness of the Sahara.
Their truck was like a little car truck, right?
I'm not even familiar because
they did a Dodge.
Truck.
They did a Dodge one as well.
Oh, yeah, that's what the D50 was.
Yeah,
the Dodge D50 was like a Mitsubishi little baby truck,
baby guy.
Like yeah, it's the Mitsubishi Manly Max. Yeah.
was the Dodge? What was it the Raider or whatever? The little front wheel drive Ute.
It had a crazy name.
Oh, the Rampage.
Rampage.
The Raider is actually Dodge's stealing the. The Montero.
Yes.
That was their theft of that.
Yeah.
Their cool. theft. They broke into the mainframe.
They're like, oh, that's doing pretty well out there in those deserts. Let's
why don't we do a collab? You do all the car stuff and we'll just put our badge on it.
What movie is it? Is it?
Rampage is a little truck.
Yeah. Henry wants one really bad.
Dude, there's a clean one in my neighborhood. Little silver one. I wanna not buy that.
And it's cool
like
to look at.
Improv mystery show on Netflix with Will Arnett.
Oh, I like that show.
His character drives like a super clean orange Dodge Rampage.
Really? Yeah. It's really funny.
Henry's in love with him. I don't know why.
I mean, I do.
Because Mitsubishi, I mean, it tracks.
Yeah.
Truly tracks.
The X90.
If you want to check out. Henry's Tasting Cars. He made a series of shorts on our YouTube channel. It's really good, really funny.
With his Suzuki
X90? X90. X90. Yeah. It's the curvy samurai. Yeah.
It's like a sedan little tall truck.
It looks like a Honda Del Sol.
It looks like a Stocky.
Yeah, it looks like those toys you used to get at Chevron.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like it looks like you can pull it back and then let it go. And
yeah.
It goes.
Yes. Yes.
Because Mitsubishi also produced clones of the Willys Jeep for the Japanese military from 1945 all the way to 1998, the company knew a thing or two about off-roading.
I bought one of those.
Off-roading vehicles, a new Jeep.
The Willys, the Mitsubishi Willys.
Yeah, this dude on a Volkswagen forum that I was on bought like a newer Mitsubishi Willys.
They're dope.
Yeah,
they're cool. They come diesel. Which is pretty sick.
They used their off-roading knowledge to develop their Montero SUVs, which absolutely dominated the Dakar Rally during their lifespan, securing a 1-2 finish at the 1985 Dakar. This motorsport success created a halo around the Montero in the U.S. market, helping Mitsubishi to sell 266,000 units by 1987.
Jeez.
Their dominance of Dakar didn't stop there.
From 2001 until 2007, the Mitsubishi Montero won 7 consecutive rallies. So, like in the States, it's called a Montero. The car that actually, or the truck that actually won, is the
Pajero.
Pajero,
yeah.
And that's what it's called elsewhere.
It's a soft J.
It could be.
It depends on where you're from.
Nobody knows.
Just like Starion and Starion.
But Pajero Evo. Damn. Is like, just Google it. It's one of the coolest cars.
Yeah,
like,
it's got fins.
Yeah.
It's got a little spoiler.
I'm looking at a wide body 2002 Montero.
How much?
For $5,500.
Yeah, what? Man.
They're slept on.
Yeah. Oh, it's not the Evo, though.
It's not the Evo, but it looks pretty cool.
Let me see.
I mean, it's got really stupid wheels on it right now, but you could make that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Essentially the Toyota Sequoia.
You could make it cool.
Yeah, it's Jesse always talks about getting a Montero.
They're great.
But let's jump back to the 80s. Mitsubishi's full court press on the U.S. market faced an early problem because the U.S. auto industry had been getting decimated at the hands of cheap Japanese imports. So Japanese automakers voluntarily created an import restriction, capping the amount of cars that they could bring to the U.S. This was done to prevent excess regulation and increased taxes from the U.S. government. But for Mitsubishi, it meant that they couldn't sell as many cars. So, they did what any Japanese automaker of the time would do. They just built them in the United States. In 1988, Mitsubishi opened their factory in Normal, Illinois.
Don't be suspicious.
You know, just building a bunch of American
normal towns.
Normal cars.
Since they were still working with Chrysler, the facility was given a neutral name. Diamond Star Motors. This factory would be the base of Mitsubishi's U.S. manufacturing operations and was capable of pumping out up to 200,000 Eclipses, Eagle Talons, and Plymouth Lasers a year from its opening until its 2015 closure.
With a name like that, you think they'd be selling luxury vehicles?
Diamond Star
Diamonds
Motors.
And stars.
Well, you're saying that a Plymouth Laser ain't a luxury vehicle?
Absolutely not.
Oh, toy. Let me get your caviar, Mr. Rockefeller.
I ordered oysters.
My first time eating caviar was with you, James.
Yeah. With this release, the jig is up. With this relief from the shackles of the import restriction, Mitsubishi was set to conquer the U.S. It had a diverse lineup of stylish cars that people wanted to buy, got shout-outs in Nas and Wu-Tang Clan songs, and sales were skyrocketing. In 1991, the company was freed from its import deal with Chrysler, though Mitsubishi continued making cars for Chrysler on a contractual basis. Mitsubishi's long-standing relationship with Jackie Chan also began to bear fruit during this period.
Finally.
Thank you.
Planted seeds in Jackie Chan years ago. Haven't.
If you don't know, it's one of our favorite things. We mention it quite a bit. Jackie Chan had been sponsored by Mitsubishi since the 70s. His movies would feature Mitsubishi's in exchange for free vehicles for those movies.
What a deal.
That's sick.
You know, I didn't know about the Jackie Chan Mitsubishi thing until, like, Donut said it.
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, it all makes sense now.
Perhaps the most beautiful, campy example of this is Chan's 1995 film, Thunderbolt. Jackie plays a Mitsubishi former test driver moonlighting as a tow truck operator / crime fighter in Hong Kong. There's even a training montage at the Mitsubishi factory featuring an in-movie race team rocking Jackie Chan racing merch. Chan's rise to prominence during the 1990s further fueled interest in Mitsubishi's, giving the brand the same cool factor on the street that the Pajero gave it in the dirt. But Thunderbolt and Jackie Chan didn't create a tuner culture surrounding Mitsubishi's.
Evo in the street, Pajero in the dirt.
There's one.
I don't know.
There's one Jackie Chan movie where he drives a yellow Mitsubishi FTO.
Oh, yeah.
It's so
one
sick.
We never got.
Yeah.
But Thunderbolt and Jackie Chan didn't create a tuner culture surrounding Mitsubishi's. It reflected one. Cars like the Eclipse, Lancer, and JRO came equipped with a tuner-friendly engine, the turbocharged Sirius 4G. The cylinder block was cast iron, not aluminum, which meant that it could accept more boost before having to upgrade the internals. This plug-and-play capability, combined with the Eclipse's 90s styling, freaking bubbly-ass swooping lines, plastic tape deck housings, made it an instant success. It looked different than everything in the whole planet.
Yeah, it had that big Eclipse spoiler.
And a big Eclipse spoiler that just went whoop, 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 whoop. Bump on the hood if it was a turbo one.
Mm-hmm. That's like a core memory for me is going down El Camino Real into Atascadero and pulling up, being at a stoplight.
You got to stop doxing yourself.
And
you're just doxing
It's like
parents.
The main street in Atascadero.
Stop doxing your parents.
But yeah, quit doxing
this. Silver
Scott, quit doxing Scott.
The silver Eclipse pulls up next to us with a big old spoiler, just like bumping the tunes, dude.
Yeah, just that Moby tunes, song, bumping. Or the one where she's dancing with the seatbelt from the Mitsubishi commercial.
Oh, the one Dave Chappelle made fun of.
I've told this story a number of times, but one of the first girls I ever had in a car with me, I was driving. I had a S13 240 with the stock KA motor, so like. It's truck. A truck engine. Mm-hmm. It's not fast. But like I was like into cars and I was at a stoplight and these twins, like nerds, like identical twin nerds with glasses.
Red
and
hair
like,
or no?
No. Crew cuts like NASA engineers pulled up in a first gen Eclipse. And like, sick. Dude, if there's nerd twins that are sharing a car, like there is no way that car's not super fast. Mm-hmm. And like the girl I was with, her name
Justin's
was
a twin.
It's the burden of being a twin. Yeah, you have to share
everything. If you and your brother share a car, it's going to be a fast car. Yeah. Like you're like, wow, let's make it, you know, it's twice. And
two heads.
And this the girl that I was with, again, one of the first times I ever was alone with a girl, probably. I went to boys' school. She leans out of the window. She goes, "You want a race?" And like in unison, their heads just like turn towards us. And they go, they at the same time they both go, "You're gonna lose." And like I was just like, "They're right. Like, what are you doing?"
Did you know in those first gen Eclipses, the ones with the turbo, there was a dial where you can turn the turbo down.
Whoa.
And like it would just sit idle and that's not sick. Have boost, and then you crank it up.
Oh, that's cool.
That's really cool. Crap. But yeah, these twin geniuses smoked me.
Your truck motor just trying as hard as it is.
Like, I got torque, but just like the need, the tack is just like, man, I'd give it all to go back. Trade it off for one more day.
We actually have those twins coming in to guest on the next podcast.
Yeah. Oh, God.
We tracked them down.
If we're bringing in twins, I'll just get my brother here.
Yeah.
The Eclipse was a natural competitor to cars like the Toyota Supra, the Mazda RX-7, and Nissan Z cars. It wasn't. Like, I feel like it, like, wasn't.
It was a little bit slower.
Well, it was, like, cheaper, too.
Yeah, it gets mentioned in this, like, because we group them all together now, just, like, in, like, a retrospective of 90s cars. But, like, yeah, it was more was more affordable. The Supra was, like, kind of a luxury car on the interior. Mm-hmm. Really
I'd
nice.
Say it was, like, more like a 240SX or Sylvia mm-hmm. competitor.
The 3000 GT was more of like
that was their super
GTR kind of. Mm-hmm. But Nissan was so crazy because they had so many six cylinders and turbos.
Dude, they had insane cars in the 90s.
Yeah.
Again, I think both Mitsubishi and Nissan are kind of like, if you make a bunch of cool stuff, you get about a decade to do it. Mm-hmm. And then you have to make tiny SUVs for the rest of your life to pay for it.
Pretty much.
Neither of these companies. Nissan actually owned Mitsubishi.
Oh.
Perhaps the most famous pop culture Mitsubishi is the one used towards the beginning of The Fast and the Furious. That massive winged lime green tuner car that Paul Walker loses to Vin Diesel. It's a 1995 Eclipse.
Then it gets exploded.
Gets exploded because of the NOS.
Oh no, my car just exploded.
Oh no, it's exploded.
You and me a non-exploded car. I said a non-exploded car, not an almost exploded car.
And while we can't know how well Eclipse exhaust manifolds and passenger side footwells stand up to the rigors of NOS, we do know that 90s Mitsubishis were pretty reliable. Racing Lancers wasn't just for the streets. In 1996, Tommi Mäkinen beat Colin McRae and Carlos Sainz Sr. to take his first World Rally Championship title.
Those are some big names.
Yeah, dude, that's a lot of three guys for one sentence.
Yeah, wow.
That's like a massive amount of three guys in one sentence, dude. When we were at Sonoma shooting the finale of the WRX Hilo, we blew a transmission up, and the shot we... Luckily found a shop that was going to swapped it out for us in like 3 hours. But in their shop, they had Tommi Mäkinen Evo 6.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
And it was left-hand drive.
Sheesh.
Yeah, because it was from Hong Kong.
Mm.
Sick.
We should go to Hong Kong.
We should go to Hong Kong.
Jackie Chan has a secret lair there.
It was secret.
Like, I'm not trying to dox Jackie Chan, but he's got a cool huge lair with a big garage.
I want to, dude, we should go hang out with Jackie Chan.
Yeah. For real.
For like 6 months. This string of success in WRC and the Evo 7's appearance in Too Fast, Too Furious hyped up the Lancer Evo in the U.S. market. Ugh. But the Evo wouldn't be released in the U.S. until well into the 2000s. Enthusiasts naturally wanted what they couldn't have, and hype around the car built.
Ain't that the truth?
Ain't that the truth? Things were going so well for Mitsubishi that rumors swirled about a possible purchase of fellow automotive giant Honda.
Wow.
Yeah, Honda wasn't doing great in the 1990s from a business perspective. Honda's over-engineered cars had much longer R&D times than comparable Nissan, Toyota, or Mitsubishi models, and it cost the company more to produce them. But Honda's then wildly successful venture into Formula One snapped funds and attention away from the actual balance sheet. This style of business was all good and well in the 1980s when the Japanese economy was booming, but quickly became a liability during the lost decade of the 1990s. Honda CEO Nobuhiko Kawamoto barely staved off the takeover attempt. Kawamoto, a former F1 Honda engineer, was forced to make the painful decision to leave F1 at the height of their power in order to avoid bankruptcy.
Damn, that sucks.
Yeah.
Takeover is my least favorite word now.
Mm-hmm. I'm watching a lot of Succession, and there's talk of hostile takeovers
quite a bit
all the time.
Pretty much hostile takeover the show.
Yeah.
The company then introduced the popular CRV and cut down their R&D, choices that ultimately saved the company, but made their cars a little bit more boring to us.
Well, you turn into the bug man from Men in Black.
Sugar water.
Sugar.
More water. More.
Even though the takeover never came to pass, it's a testament to Mitsubishi's 1990s prowess and confidence that it felt it could take over what is now the world's single largest motor vehicle manufacturer. Mitsubishi ultimately reached its high water mark in the early 2000s. It sold over 340,000 vehicles in 2003, introduced the Lancer Evo 8 to the U.S. market, and its cultural cachet was at an all-time high. But then annual sales plummeted. What happened?
We'll be right back with more of this story, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Scandal is what happened, James. And we're not talking about a rip off the Band-Aid, apologize and people will forget type scandal. We're talking about blunder after blunder after blunder after blunder.
After...
blunder.
Yeah. After plunder.
So many that we don't actually have time to get through them all. Just know that by the end of it, Mitsubishi is going to look like Wile E. Coyote at the end of a Looney Tunes episode. A timely reference for our audience.
Yeah.
And it'll be about as trustworthy as that cartoon. Takamune Kimura, Mitsubishi CEO, had a little bit of a Yakuza problem. Yakuza extortion of Japanese companies is a well-documented phenomenon. Japanese companies will pay individual members of the Yakuza, called Sokaya, to ensure that yearly meetings are not disrupted by Yakuza operatives and prevent corporate malfeasance from reaching the press. Turns out that Kimura had been pressured by Sokaya to pay up. He did so. to the tune of about 23.5 million yen.
Damn.
Kimura had a reason to be afraid. In 1994, some Sequoia had stabbed Juntaro Suzuki to death with a katana outside his house after he stopped payment. But it turns out that paying off mobsters to keep your company's name in good standing only works if nobody knows you're paying off these mobsters. A part of the process that didn't quite go Kimura's way. The mobsters were eventually arrested and disclosed the transaction, prompting Kimura to resign as the head of Mitsubishi in 1997.
I'm so glad I'm not behind on my katana payments.
If there's something I don't want to be stabbed by, it's a katana outside my house.
Yeah.
That would suck.
Stab me with a paring knife in an alley, but not a katana in front of my house.
That's a long blade. Kimura's replacement, Katsuhiko Kawasoe, didn't fare much better. Turns out that Mitsubishi had systematically covered up data about vehicle defects for the previous 30 years. Automobile recall specialists at the company would simply stamp defective complaints secret and then stuff them away in a locker at company headquarters. Best way to ignore the problem is just to lock it away.
Mm-hmm.
Executives at Mitsubishi initially stated that the practice of covering up defects had been going on for only 8 years. Katsuhiko Kawasoe evidently didn't get this memo. He actually stated that illegal acts had taken place for a long time. That was a direct quote. Kawasoe was right about this and would actually continue to be right about it. He himself was arrested and later convicted of criminal negligence in the 2000s. The now required recalls cost the company an estimated $69 million.
Nice.
And while only 50,000 vehicles in North America were ultimately recalled, Mitsubishi's stock and credibility were severely damaged. Perhaps the only people less thrilled at this scandal than defective Mitsubishi drivers was Daimler Chrysler. In the months before the scandal, the company had taken a 34% stake in Mitsubishi. Daimler Chrysler had viewed its Mitsubishi acquisition as a step on the road to becoming a global automotive powerhouse that could compete with the likes of General Motors and Volkswagen. And now they were second-guessing their decision. Yet, the defect scandal was not the only problem facing the company. Mitsubishi had run a marketing scheme to allow no payments whatsoever on the car for the first 12 months.
I remember this.
This meant that the company had to repo cars that both hadn't made a dime and now were worth less than they cost to make.
Nice.
This, combined with the East Asian financial crisis of 1997, had left Mitsubishi with an insane debt load. But Daimler Chrysler still persisted in buying up Mitsubishi. The structure of the deal allowed it to list the company's assets, but not all of its debts, making Daimler Chrysler the corporate equivalent of a mullet. Business in the front, party in the back.
I remember that commercial, just like, oh, you can get finance right now. You don't have to pay for a whole year. And I was just like, how do you make money?
That's insane, yeah.
Like, what?
What do you think of that?
Yeah, it didn't make sense.
Unsurprisingly, by 2004, the partnership was on the rocks. Debt continued to accumulate. Profitability remained elusive. And Mitsubishi's North American car sales had entered the aforementioned free fall. Executives at Daimler Chrysler refused to bankroll the flailing company. And ultimately, the 69-month partnership between the brands,
nice,
with no bailout from Chrysler waiting in the wings, Mitsubishi Motors did what any rich kid would do. It turned to its parents for money, the original Mitsubishi Group, Keiretsu. Mitsubishi Group invested 40 billion yen into the company in 2004, 70 billion more in 2005, and a final 30 billion yen in 2006. The investment and its accompanying revitalization plan worked, and Mitsubishi Motors turning a 20 million yen profit by 2008. But in North America, the damage had already been done. Mitsubishi's debt meant that less money was available to update their cars. A planned project to manufacture a cross-model car platform in North America, imaginatively named Project America, was scrapped. The project came shortly before Mitsubishi's restructuring and ultimate decision to focus its North American business on imported rather than bespoke models. And the result? A half-baked car platform that couldn't do anything well. Crossovers using the platform failed to meet sales figures. The Eclipse, once the savior of the tuner crowd due to its low weight, now faced reviews calling out its not-so-sporty proportions.
It got real bad.
Yes. Perhaps the lone bright spot on the North American Mitsubishi experience during this period was the introduction of the Lancer Evo.
Mitsubishi easily could have cut bait on its Halo car in an era where profitability took precedence over track capability, but offered the Lancer Evo up to until 2017, in spite of low sales figures. However, the North American car market was moving away from all sedans, not just sporty ones. Crossovers overtook sedans in the market share near the end of Lancer Evo's tenure, and today, Mitsubishi does not market a single sedan in the North American market. I remember in when the Evo 10 first came out, I forget, was it like 2009?
Yeah, 2009.
2009. I remember like this junior at my high school that was, he was like dating one of my buddies, got one. I have like no idea how he afforded that unless his parents were helping him pay for it, which is likely.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he really really leaned into being the Evo guy.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
What would you describe an Evo guy?
Well, he was, I remember he's probably like 5'4", like skinnier dude, rocking like the zip-up hoodie all the time.
He wore his hat under the hood.
He drove with his hood up. The hat or the hood. He just, he was one of those zip up hoodie guys.
Sounds like any loud exhaust guy with dark window tint.
If you thought Mitsubishi was done with scandals, they weren't, guys. I fooled you. This time, Mitsubishi would finally get its wish to be bigger and better than an automotive titan, just not in the way the company wanted.
Not steroids.
In 2015, not long after news broke that Volkswagen had been cheating on emission tests since 2009, Mitsubishi revealed that it actually had been cheating on their emission tests for the last 25 years. This, predictably...
Wait, blood doping is bad? We've been doing it the whole time. What? Thought it was part of the game.
Predictably, this led to the...
The EPA's right behind me, isn't it?
You mean you guys weren't?
This, predictably, led to the discontinuation of offending models as well as the resignation of top executives. This new scandal came to light around the same time that Nissan bought a 34% stake in Mitsubishi under a certain well-known CEO named Carlos Ghosn. In 2020, officials raided the Mitsubishi Frankfurt headquarters as part of their investigation into whether or not the company was selling diesel vehicles in Germany that were programmed to cheat on emissions tests. Spoiler alert, guys. Or should I say exhaust alert?
Nice.
They were... German prosecutors ultimately fined Mitsubishi just under $30 million.
That's pretty cheap, though.
Yeah, it's probably that just sounds like a price to pay.
A much diminished Mitsubishi still has a presence in the U.S. market. Mitsubishi states that it currently has over 300 dealerships in 46 states. It sold 85,510 cars in 2022. The brand offers essentially four models. The Outlander, the Outlander Sport, the Mirage, and the Eclipse Cross. One of these, the Outlander, is the bestseller, with 40,942 units sold last year. The brand's tuner heritage lives on with the Eclipse Cross, although in name only. Car and Driver called it nothing more than a run-of-the-mill compact SUV that fails to live up to its namesake. U.S. News was more blunt, calling it not a very good SUV.
You know what's funny, though? It has the turbo and all-wheel drive.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of stuff has turbo all-wheel drive these days.
That's coming from U.S. News.
U.S. News is like, it's not a very good SUV.
We don't know anything about cars, but this car sucks.
Yeah, and they ranked it last in its segment.
152 horsepower.
Mitsubishi's own corporate publications, the kind of rosy, business-is-booming documents every corporation puts out, aren't exactly glowing. In 2022, the company stated that it had, quote, fallen into the vicious circle of being compelled to offer its products at appealing prices in order to secure sales volume and maintain factory utilization
rates.
Oh,
that classic circle. I fall into that circle all the time, honestly.
I mean, basically they're saying we don't make anything cool because we're trying to make stuff
money
cheap.
Yeah.
And so we'll sell more of it and also figure out what we can make in factories that we already have. So basically they're like, we have no joy left. Mitsubishi continues to carry astronomical levels of debt, but hopes its continued partnership with Nissan and foray into increasingly fuel-efficient cars like the Outlander FEV We'll save it. Early returns on the Outlander FEV are positive, although no concrete numbers were given, which makes us believe they're maybe not so positive. That said, noted disgraced CEO and is he still at large?
He's at large. He's in Lebanon.
Yeah. CEO at large, Carlos Ghosn, who is at the helm of Nissan when it started its partnership with Mitsubishi, called Mitsubishi the typical zombie Japanese company.
Zombie company.
He must have said that from the safety of his compound in Lebanon.
He actually said it. He actually said it in the box.
Yeah. I'm being shipped across. I'm being shipped across the world right now. But yeah, I got time for an interview.
I want to say something. Mitsubishi is a typical zombie Japanese company. We got to cast that movie.
You're telling me.
Yeah.
Zombie Japanese company sounds like a cool movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it could be Joe Montana.
I was thinking
Joe Montana plays Ghosn.
Alfred Molina.
Wait, who's Alfred Molina?
Doc Ock in Spider-Man 2.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think it would be the guy from Last of Us.
Oh, dude.
Pedro?
Pedro, yeah.
He'd be good.
Yeah. This is my pick. Everybody's got to be hot in a movie.
Yeah. Ian McShane.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah.
That's Ghosn for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good pull, dude. That's strong.
I just watched Coraline for the first time.
Is he in that?
He's the Russian guy's voice.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he's
Ian
also
McShane
in
as
Wick.
Carlos Ghosn.
Who plays Jackie Chan? The guy that was in Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, who's the blind guy in John Wick now? That guy's really good. He was Ip Man or IP Man.
Oh, yeah.
That guy's great.
Ip Man, yeah.
Just get the whole cast from John Wick.
From the people who brought you John Wick 4.
Who's that guy that plays that other guy?
The rags to riches story at the heart of Mitsubishi's founding may turn out to be a back-to-rags story for the Mitsubishi Motors Corporation. Yeah. From its high-flying, all-conquering motorsport and sales successes of the 1990s and early 2000s to its current self, basically the car brand equivalent of a two-week-old tamale husk.
Ooh, harsh. Strong.
Mitsubishi Motors has seen a rise and fall that would be enough to make an elevator blush. But it's still backed by the powerful Mitsubishi, Keiretsu, and the Nissan-Renault alliance. So it's anyone's guess whether the three diamonds can survive the car market's next big push into electrification. I think like the one thing that gives me a little bit of faith, and I say I want to underline a little bit, is that they seem aware of what they're doing wrong.
Yeah.
Like the whole like, hey, yeah, we're really not enjoying ourselves very much right now. We're just making cars that are cheap and like, we don't care about them. Yeah. We just need them to make money. We just need to use the facilities that we already have. The fact that they're calling that out, like that's the first step.
We got to pay off all this gambling debt.
Yeah. Right. The first step is to admit that they're powerless.
I was wrong. They are coming out with 16 new models in the next 5 years.
Nine of them are EVs.
That doesn't make me, like, make one.
Hello, my name is Blaze Wolf.
Yeah, right.
But you can call me Cool Guy. I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee, and an avid watcher and listener of your infotainments. Hey. Thank you very much, Mr. Blaze Wolf.
I was just in Knoxville. Beautiful place.
I don't want to be that guy, but while listening to the first few minutes of episode 179, Nolan was speaking about Jim Clark's ability to ferret out the ladies. Then there was a discussion about why this phrase is so weird, and some reasons were given to explain its use. They were really great ideas, but I think I have the actual answer. Ferrets were not hunted, but the hunters. Mm-hmm. I'm no expert, but from what I remember from a random YouTube video a while back, back in the day, rabbits were a large pest to the farmers because they would eat all their crops! Exclamation mark. I can't remember the history exactly, but there were people who made a living by training ferrets to hunt and kill these rabbits. These ferreters, as they were called, would carry ferrets with them to farmland, find rabbit burrows, and then throw them in the hole, which they would then chase the rabbit out of their hole and dispose of the little cottontails. R.I.P. to these little dudes. Yeah. As Joe insightfully mentioned, Ferrets are squirmy little creatures who would fit perfectly into these holes, and this is now a popular sport still played to this day. I don't want to meet a professional ferret.
I do.
Anyway, love the show and the podcast, y'all. I work a mindless job in the evenings, and this podcast gives me good humor to lighten up and the education to keep my brain moving. Y'all are a great inspiration, one of the reasons I'm so interested in learning everything I can about automobiles and more. Y'all keep me fired up. Best, Blaze Wolf.
Dude, sick name if that's your real name.
Thank you very much for your insight there, Blaze Wolf. Dang, that is actually, yeah.
I told you.
Yeah.
Have you seen the video of the guy putting his pet snake in a wall and then all the mice come out?
No. No, that's cool.
That's the first thing I thought of.
Whoa.
Justin, it's been a pleasure having you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You got to come on again.
First podcast in the books.
Yeah.
Breaking in the new setup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
If you want to follow, please follow Justin on all socials at Justin Freeman.
Yeah, not Twitter.
Freeman.
TikTok and Instagram.
Justin has a TikTok where he looks at car door handles.
Yeah. So my background's industrial design, and you know, one of the major things is how you interact with things, and one of the things you don't think about that you interact with all the time is the door handle. Yeah. So it's really apparent when it's a bad design.
Yeah. That's an important part of your car there. But yeah, you had your one about the your Subaru XT's door handle really popped off, and now you're doing a bunch of other ones, and people really love it. So check that out on TikTok. Follow him on Instagram. Do you have any pictures of Edgar on your account?
Oh, tons.
Okay, yeah. Find some pictures of Edgar the dog. He's a good boy.
I posted one today of him, me opening up a peanut butter jar when he was outside and laying down to sleep, and then he runs in and just comes into the house.
Yeah. Follow James at James Pumphrey. Follow Joe at Joe G. Weber. Juice it up. Follow me at Nolan J. Sykes. Big thank you to our writer this week, Sean Post, and our producers, Gavin Kinzel and Christina Felsky. All right. We'll see you next time. Past gas.
Past gas.
Bye.
Dun, dun, dun. Past gas. Past test.
Get away from us. Go away. Bye.